You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Hi there, welcome to the show. Friday, April the 19th, back in TW11 after an absorbing 3 days at a very chilly Newmarket. Classic trials roll on to Newbury in the UK this weekend. More of that with trainer Rafe Beckett, plus news on his early classic contenders later in the show. We'll also be looking ahead to the Scottish Grand National, a race that could pretty well finish off the British Trainers' Championship if Willie Mullins wins with one of his many, many entries. Talking to the owner of McDermott, Pat Gallagher, later as well. Plus, Ed Crisford looks ahead to the Gosprey's up sale next week, where he bought Carla's Way last year, who went on to do so well. And Dave Ord has something for the weekend. But first, news that Cheltenham would almost certainly change something as regards the race programme after quite a bit of criticism and a bit of soul-searching. Managing Director Ian Renton has gone on record in today's Racing Post, and this is what he had to say to me earlier this morning.
I think the one thing that's for certain is we're going to continue with a four-day festival, and that our racegoers very much prefer seven races to six. So that is the starting point, that we maintain 28 races, which provides a few difficulties, because if we look at races that may be weaker than we would like, we then need to find an alternative race to replace them.
And are there any inspired ideas on that front of entirely fresh races that might fit into a Cheltenham festival and replace ones that aren't working?
That is what we hope much of the consultation will bring, that either ourselves or people outside the Jockey Club that we will be discussing changes with may come up with one or two ideas. I mean, what we've read in the media, I think, as I said, there have been some very interesting and sensible suggestions, some slightly more wayward, which we will not be following.
The obvious races that have come under a lot of scrutiny are the National Hunt Chase, which is the most historic race of the entire festival, but has changed significantly in recent years and has produced a small field and rather uncompetitive one as well. And the one or both or three of the novice chases to change in some way. Is there room for three grade one novice chases? Is there room for all the novice hurdles? If you decide to remove a grade one race, is that straightforward as regards the jumps pattern committee and the BHA? What responsibility is it of the Jockey Club? What responsibility is it of the industry as a whole?
We will obviously work very closely with both the BHA, who, you know, have come up with some great suggestions themselves, and the jump pattern committee. If there are any changes of that nature, I mean, I think, you know, what you've talked about probably is the area which will get the most scrutiny. We've got to make sure that what we're doing is not a knee-jerk reaction to the current horse population, which we'd love to think may be very different in 2 or 3 years' time. All these things do tend to go in cycles. And I think, as I said in the paper, at the moment we do have a shortage in this country of top-rated horses. It is getting the balance between, you know, maintaining things for the medium term, but reacting to the current circumstances.
Okay, so it is. Would you say that it is almost certain then that we will not see exactly the same programme next year?
There are bound to be some changes. As to the extent of those changes, at the moment it's too early to say. As I say, we've got time to reflect. I mean, we don't need to make decisions until later in the summer. We'd obviously like to be in a position to knowing what the programme will be probably in advance of the start of the next season. But we've got a few months to look at all the data, and, you know, that is what we will be researching to ensure all the decisions we make are sort of based on proper data rather than just anecdotal.
All right, that was Ian Renton. This is David Yates, newsboy from the Daily Mirror. It looks like they're going to change stuff, Dave, but still have 28 races. How do you make this work?
Yeah, well, I'm pleased that they've come up with these admissions early on. It gives them time to get the changes in place by working with the BHA and before the season starts. I assume that Ian Renton means October and the showcase fixture when he says that. My own view on this, I think the novice chases are an obvious area of concern. The Turners Novices Chase is the most recent of the additions to the Cheltenham Festival's Novice Chase programme. I would bring back the Novices Handicap Chase. I think that threw up some really good horses. It was an important race for the future. Appu's Tard won it, of course, before going on to win the Cheltenham Gold Cup. I'm not sure at the moment, Nick, that I'd want to scythe the National Hunt Chase. I know it's on hard times at the moment, but it's a race that has had an influence on the future in the past. Native River was second in that race in 2016. I think if you ask me now, as of 19th of April, I would chuck out the Turners and I would put the Novices Handicap Chase back in. I think the mare's program at the festival certainly needs a bit of attention. I don't think those races, the mare's chase, the conditions hurdle, the David Nicholson mare's hurdle, and the Dawn Run novices hurdle, I don't think they're compelling races these days. And compelling is the word. When I went to Cheltenham for the first time in late 1980s, yes, it was a three-day meeting, but every race was a compelling one. I know that Brighter Days Ahead has given the Dawn Run novices hurdle a bit of a boost this year with that victory at Aintree last week, but I still think that's an underwhelming race. The David Nicholson mare's hurdle is really notable for two things: Quavega winning it every year and Annie Power falling at the last in 2015. And I also think that the mare's chase, it's overstating it to say that it's a non-event, but I certainly don't think it's a compelling spectacle. We had a good mare's card at Cheltenham on Thursday yesterday, and I can't see why one of those races, or indeed two, I know that then that brings us down below the 28 race number that Ian Renton wants, but I would think that that card would be a very good place to stage one or two of those Cheltenham Festival mares races. You know, I think that the boost to the mares program is obviously a welcome thing, but whether those races have a place at the most important and the most competitive meeting of the jump racing season, I don't know. For example, if you and I were opera impresari and we went round the country finding opera singers from places where you don't normally find them, that would be a laudable venture and it would obviously produce some good singers. Would we put them necessarily on the main stage at Covent Garden? Well, certainly not to begin with. And I think that at the moment, the mayor's program, as I say, its place during those 4 days, I think, is questionable. What else would I do? The cross country chase would be a handicap. Would you stop novices from running in the handicap hurdles? That's a possibility. Perhaps you could have a novices handicap hurdle. That would be an interesting one. One more thing. I know this would not be near the top of Ian Renton's list of priorities, but I would certainly try and bring in conditions whereby the Fox Hunters Chase is open to genuine amateur stables and not to the big ones. You know, it was one of, I thought, the most warming moments of the entire 4 days when Sine Nomine won for Fiona Needham, beating, of course, a horse owned by J.P. McManus and trained by Emmett Mullins. It's on the line, who then, of course, went on to win the Fox Hunters at Aintree. But for those of us who like going point to pointing and who like point to point racing, I would have thought that the incentive to get involved in a point-to-pointer is less if when you go to the Cheltenham Festival with a really good one, you're just going to get brushed aside by one of the big super trainers. As I say, that's not going to be near anybody's list of priorities. One thing that I'd like to mention is a point raised by Bruce Millington, the former Racing Post editor, in his column on the Thursday, a good couple of years ago now. Now, Bruce and I could hardly agree on the day of the week, and I don't mean that in a bad way. We just see the world in very different ways. But Bruce, he floated the idea of the horses towards the top of the handicap getting more of the purse if they're successful, and thereby incentivizing those owners with horses who are likely to carry top weight in those big races, just dangling a bit of a carrot, say, you know what, if you do run in this race, you do get a very big purse if you win, and having a sliding scale so that those towards the bottom of the weights took home less money. Now, I think that is an idea that's worth exploring with converting some of those races to handicaps. A lot of people will think it's crazy, but when I read that a couple of years ago, I thought it was worth looking at. Just one final thing. Ian Renton said in his piece with you that in 2 to 3 years, these things are cyclical, and that hopefully the horse population will start to go up again. Well, it won't do it on its own. It will only do it with, as he mentioned at the end of that interview, data-driven changes that make having horses in training a more attractive thing to do. So these changes won't happen on their own, but I'm glad that Cheltenham and those at the Jockey Club have made an early start with addressing them with what he said to you this morning.
Okay, I do want to get on to the flat racing and what's happening this weekend, and indeed the Scottish National in a moment. But just briefly, Dave, I've been really interested in the Grand National reaction arc this week, which has been lots of positives about the race as a whole, about its cleanness, the amount of horses in with a chance, lots of industry drum beating, etc. And then a bit of a backlash through the middle of the week. An interesting, stimulating, trenchant piece by Richie Forrestal in the Racing Post. Chris Cook, some really interesting stuff as well, canvassing opinion from people who've been watching the Grand National for years and offering his own thoughts on, as he put it, sort of mourning the loss of an old friend whilst recognising the new race has plenty of merits. It's been quite interesting to watch and listen to.
Yeah, it really has. I very much enjoyed Chris Cook's contributions and Richie Forrestal's. I think that we live in an increasingly binary world. I think that that's fueled by social media. Things have to be either compulsory or banned. If someone makes a mistake in public life, they have to be sacked. I think that that was at play in the aftermath of the Grand National. As there were no fatalities, it was proclaimed as a triumph. Well, it was a pretty close run thing, wasn't it? Because Corrett Ramblin nearly did himself damage at the second fence, having unseated his jockey Derek Fox at the first. Yeah, I mean, my own view on it, this is the first time I've been on the Nick Luck Daily since last weekend. I think to the once a year viewer, I don't think the spectacle has really changed. It's obviously very early days with regard to whether the latest raft of changes have been a success. We're dealing with a sample group of one Grand National, which is obviously far too small. We know that the fences have been the same for a decade now. With regard to the so-called old-timers, I wish I could think of a better phrase than that, but the traditionalists who recognise the race is not what it was, well, I certainly row in with those. Am I happy about it? Well, not really, but do I recognise that we live in an ever-changing world when political pressures are at play with regard to horse racing, and particularly with regard to the Grand National? Well, yes, they are. I don't like the changes to the whip. I didn't have any problem with the Procus whip at all when it's used properly. And even now, I wouldn't have put numerical limits on its use. But those changes have been brought in pretty much. There are exceptions, obviously Dubai, Japan, but in plenty of other racing nations in Europe and in America, those changes have been brought in. I don't like them, but I've got to recognise that we live in a world where, again, the use of the whip is under scrutiny. So I've waffled on there. I'm not sure that was a brief response.
No, I think you covered a lot of ground in pretty succinct fashion. And yeah, no, I think we can not put the Grand National to bed, but I think we can probably slide along to another national, a Scottish national tomorrow, which could have it could put the final nail in the coffin of Dan Skelton and Paul Nicholls' championship hopes, couldn't it?
Yes, it certainly could. It was after the Grand National last Saturday. There were two interviews that I was present at with Willie Mullins, and the first one he said, well, we'll have to give it a go about the trainer's title. And then at the formal press conference, he said, it's on. And it certainly is on, isn't it? I mean, he's attacking the Grand National meeting at Ayr with plenty of runners. Yeah, we could. I mean, we might not have to think about El Fabiolo and the railway fences by the time that we get to Saturday evening and the end of the Scottish National meeting at Ayr.
Well, I'm joined now by Pat Gallagher, who's Gallagher Equine own McDermott, who is one of the key Willie Mullins fancies for the Scottish National. Not the shortest price at the moment, that's Spanish Harlem, but McDermott's going to be ridden by Danny Mullins as he was last time when he absolutely bolted up in admittedly a smaller but not a bad race at Ferry House. Pat, how excited are you about being a part of this unfolding story with a promising young horse?
I'm very excited, Nick. I'm very excited. Because over the years I've had plenty of horses, and like I said to you before, sadly not enough good ones. But McDermott seems to have become good for us. His last outing at Ferry House was, sadly, I was in Dublin that morning, decided to start going racing, and flew back to London, and as I say, he bolted up on that race. Yeah, no, it's exciting.
And we know about your ownership exploits we've discussed before on the show, and had a lot of horses trained at your own base and elsewhere here. How far does your association with Willie Mullins go back?
It goes back quite a few years because, as you know, Nick, we have a box at Ascot, and Willie would always come up. I'd done a win on that Willie back everyone probably a lot of years ago. Always said to him, if you find a good horse and you stick my name against it, and as I said, that one, he bought him. And as I say, yeah, he's had a few runs. He won a hurdle race for me, and on the day I didn't even have a shilling on him. I suppose that's what helped him win. And he's won his chase now. So, you know, we're hopeful for tomorrow. But look, that's all you can be in a 4-mile contest. It's a long way round.
I guess the one thing about him is that he is completely unexposed at the trip. And I mean, the last time he ran, it was the first time he'd run under rules at any rate, even beyond 2.5 miles.
That's right, and the further he went, the better he went.
And so what, I always ask trainers, owners who've got horses with Willie Mullins this, and I always get roughly the same answer, but can you read the tea leaves, Pat, or not?
I drink coffee, Nick. the tea leaves, look, Willie has such firepower. I mean, it could be that he's champion in this country as well as Ireland. You don't do that with a stable full of mediocre horses. He has top horses. You know, you need to have a good horse to be in that place.
You do. And is this going to presage a few more Gallagher Bloodstock horses in Clough Sutton?
Yeah. I mean, look, I love the fun with Willie and with his team. And as I say, I just, look, it's a sport I love. As I said to you one day at Sandown, it's a sport I love. I love the people, everything. You know, there's some great people involved in racing at every level. You know, from the people mucking them out and riding them out to the trainers to the jockeys. It's still one, to me anyway, it's one of the fun industries we can be in. I mean, you know, as much as you could say money has taken over in the game, you can buy. I mean, I listened to Richard Hannon yesterday when he had this big winner at Newmarket. He cost 28,000 guineas. And, you know, he bolted up in that race. I mean, those horses probably cost 10 times that, but way behind him. I mean, it's like buying the ticket for the raffle. you know, you're lucky if you get the winner. Happy days.
You had a very happy day just the other day on the flat with a horse. A horse called Duty of Care, and I thought to myself, "Oh, you're going to have some fun with him." He took his form to a whole new level.
He and little Safi Osborne gave him a fabulous ride. You know, we changed tactics again, jumped him out, got him up there, and another horse and him set the pace, and that was it. He went away from that. No, it was great. It was great with Jamie because we sent him up to Newcastle. He was disappointed. He, you know, we found a different way of riding him. Safi done. She said when her dad tried to talk, she said, "Dad, I've got a plan." So that was enough. And fair play to the little girl. Her plan worked. And he's a nice horse. I mean, he's by Kingman. I mean, Christ, well-bred, you know. Jamie picked him up for someone in Australia that didn't come up. I didn't want him in the end. And he rang me and I said, "No problem, Jamie." I'd always said to him, because again, I like characters like Jamie. I mean, I had horses with Neville Callan for 23 or 24 years. The wildest man ever put a bridle on a horse. We had serious fun, and Neville was a great friend and someone I loved to be with. And it's, to me, as much as good trainers, you want a good horse, but you want to be with someone you can have a bit of fun with, and you certainly have a bit of fun with Jamie.
And, of course, going back to where we started this conversation, that a lot of people will say, for all his brilliance, for all his record-breaking exploits, people have fun with Willie Mullins.
Yeah, he's a fun character. I mean, you go over... And, you know, when I'm over there in the summer, it's a long way from where I come from, up in the west, Leitrim, down to Carlow. But you drive down there, you go for dinner with Willie, you think, oh, I'll never forget the first time. I had a couple of friends of mine, Tony Gann and another pal from America. I said, "Lads, we need to be sharp because Willie will be gone by 9 o'clock. These guys go to bed." I think at 1 o'clock, the taxi had turned up for him three times. And each time he said, "I don't come back." And I mean, next morning, we struggled to get around there early, and he was as bright as a button. You know, he knows how to entertain, he knows how to train, and it's fun. It's fun being there. And there's no, what I like and what I won't take from anyone, Nick, is bullshit. You know, if the horse is no good, tell me, look, forget about it. It's not the first bad one I had.
Pat Gallagher there, the owner of McDermott, who is amongst the fancies for the Coral Scottish National tomorrow. David Ord is with us with something for the weekend from sportinglife.com. Dave, the Scottish Grand National is always a terrific race, enlivened this year. But what can you tell me about the likelihood of Willie Mullins adding yet another big pot and really finishing off Nichols and Skelton?
Yeah, it's a fascinating subplot, isn't it? And you won't be surprised to know, Nick, he's bang in the mix to do just that with McDermott. I think if you look at how different this year's Coral Scottish Grand National is. I mean, there's 8 runners from Ireland this time. 4's the previous max this century, and that was in both 2015 and 2016. And Willie Mullins this century's only had 1 runner before, Measure of My Dreams, who fell at the third in 2016 under Brian Cooper. Irish horses, well, they haven't got a great record. 1 second place and 1 third place from 36 runners in the Scottish National this century, which is flies in the face of what we've seen just about everywhere else. McDermott, weight-adjusted 167p, on time form. That puts him £2 below the top-rated Mr. Vango 169 and 1 off Jeetmaker on 168. But McDermott obviously banging the mix for this Scottish National. Interesting, Spanish Harlem, who Paul Townend rides, 163p. So he's got a little bit more to find on those numbers. But both of those Mullins horses have that P, indicating they're capable of further progress.
And of course, Mr. Vango, your top-rated horse, is trained by Sarah Bradstock, whose husband Mark died earlier in the season. That would be a result of huge popularity if he were to win.
Would be a fantastic winner, wouldn't he? And such a poignant one, as you're saying. He's a real player as well, Nick. I know he was such a runaway winner, we thought was a freak, but he ran just as well as he could have been expected in that National Hunt Chase, finishing third under a positive ride. I mean, that form's been franked since. I think Mr. Vango's a massive play. And I think Jeetmaker too, from a Pirtle perspective, he's next in that. I'd just about have him as favourite. I think that the form of that Kim Muir's obviously rock solid. He's only having the fourth start of the season. And Jeetmaker himself completely unexposed as a Staines chaser, over extreme distances at least. I think they're two fascinating runners in what is a really, really intriguing Scottish National.
David Orr, thank you very much. Something for the weekend from sportinglife.com. There's also some fantastic racing at Newbury. this weekend. We'll be hearing from Rafe Beckett in a few moments' time about his hot favourite for the Greenham Stakes, who is already a gelding. But what did you enjoy out of the Craven meeting, David Yates? Did you see horses that you thought, yeah, they're going to light up the season? They're really going to make an impression.
Right. It's always an informative 3 days for the Craven meeting. And obviously it signifies to many of us the start of flat racing proper. I didn't think necessarily that the Nell Gwynn on Wednesday was going to have much of a bearing on the classics. Obviously, Pretty Crystal beating Dance Sequence in that race. The Craven, which we saw yesterday, I suppose it was significant, but not for the fact that, not necessarily by the winning horse, if you see what I mean. Hartem scored for Richard Hannon. Now, I would have thought that there were two sets of connections who were really impressed by what they saw. One, of course, would be Aidan O'Brien and the lads at Coolmore. City of Troy absolutely spanked Hartem. Hartem was 8 lengths or more behind the favourite for the 2000 Guineas and the Derby in the Dewhurst Stakes at Newmarket last October. But of course, Richard Hannon, who trains Hartem, will also saddle, ground permitting, Rosalian in the Colts Classic next month. And you would think that they too would be heartened by what they saw. Richard Hannon said afterwards that Rosalian works superior to Hartem. I think that, you know, without wishing to be disrespectful to Hartem, he was a horse who is, well, Group Two at best, isn't he? He won the Vintage Stakes at Glorious Goodwood last year and then found life tough. The connections of Rosalian will certainly be heartened. I hope that that horse gets quickish ground for the Kipco 2000 Guineas, and also, of course, connections of City of Troy, who spanked Hartem in the Dewhurst, will also be pretty pleased with events of yesterday.
All right, Classic Trial season rolls on to Newbury tomorrow. The Greenham Stakes is the recognised Colts Classic Trial for the 2000 Guineas. Zoom Zoom is the heavy favourite for the race. If he wins, he can't run in the Guineas because he's a gelding. So Rafe Beckett, his trainer, will have to plot his way through a different campaign. But he can't change history. We can talk about how good this horse is and what kind of impact he might make tomorrow and for the rest of the season. Rafe, he's come from a pretty unlikely place, hasn't he?
He has. I look back through my notes last week on him, what we wrote about him last year, and as late as mid-June, we thought he was useless. He was showing absolutely nothing, and he looked more like a giraffe than a racehorse. So Geldinger helped, and once we got stuck into him, he then pulled his finger out. But I don't think any of us thought he'd end up where he is now, that's for sure.
Yeah, and a very difficult decision to geld him either, because he's by a sire who's doing things, Zoustar, but it's not as though you looked at him and thought, well, that might be a stallion one day.
No, and even if he was a colt, you still wouldn't look at him and think he might be a stallion one day. He's a big horse, tall, lanky horse. He doesn't really look like a 7 furlong horse, but he may even go back to 6 at some point, Nick, as his mother did. I suspect he'll get sharper with racing and with miles on the clock, and we'll look forward to that too. But Greenham was always an obvious place to start after he won the Pre-Herod in November.
He's obviously got lots of form on really quite soft ground. Is that something he'll need, or just that he copes with?
I think he'll always be better with juice in the ground, yes. His mother certainly was a soft ground filly. I think he'll always edge that way.
You trained Richenza. I mean, she was pretty useful. I mean, she was a stakes quality animal.
Yeah, and you know, she got better with age. You know, I started her over 7, and she ended up winning a stakes race over 6 at 4. You know, she got better with age too, and hopefully this fella will as well.
And obviously, I'll go back to my original question: how do you then pick your way through the season if he goes and wins and bolts up tomorrow? It kind of leaves you with a nice head scratcher, but a head scratcher all the same, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is difficult. He'll, you know, he's not going to make life easy for us. Where do we go between here and Ascot? You know, the obvious place for him at Ascot is the Jersey, but you know, it's not going to be easy. But I'm sure we'll work it out.
Okay. Obviously, we're only a couple of weeks away from some of the really big Beckett hopes coming out for the season. How are the likes of Skellett, whose form took a little bit of a boost this week? I thought dance sequence ran well in the Nelgwyn and Blue Stocking. When are we likely to see them?
Skellett. If she goes to the Guineas, obviously she'll go there without a prep. I'm sort of walking the line with her a little bit, in the sense that, you know, we'll make a late decision on whether she runs or not. She's healthy and in full swing, but she's been a little behind this spring. So we'll see how that develops. I'm not concerned about that. She's got enough experience under her belt to go to the Guineas first time if we thought that was right for her. And obviously she's in France and Ireland as well. So we'll see how that develops. Blue Stocking, I think the obvious, couple of obvious races coming up for her would be the Pinnacle and then the Lancashire Oaks. Yeah. But she too will have lots of entries and we'll work out where we end up with her. She's in good shape. I'm happy with her.
She'll drop on a Group 1 somewhere this season, won't she? She will. She's got to.
You know, it will be disappointing if we don't, given what happened last year. But there we go. That's the way the cookie crumbles, isn't it? You know, and we'll keep trying until it happens.
I mean, do you think greater maturity could help her, or do you think she just is what she will always be, and that's the way your race will have to pan out perfectly for her?
I think maturity will help. Yeah, I've never thought of her as reluctant. Mm. Obviously, you know, I never thought of her as it just didn't go our way. You know, we hit the front two, or as it turned out, too soon in the Irish Oaks, and we didn't get there in time at Ascot. That's just life, isn't it? You know, but she's been very consistent. We just have to keep playing the right cards, I suspect.
And you've got a some really exciting colts as well. I loved Task Force last year, and I thought he enhanced his reputation when he finished second to Van Dijk. But is he on course for the Guineas?
He goes to Newbury on Monday for a racecourse gallop. If that goes well, he'll run. Yeah,
yeah.
He looks really well, so I've been pleased with him this spring.
And clearly, last year, one of the beauties of his profile was that you haven't really exposed him over any further than six, yet everything about his pedigree and everything about the way he races says that he ought to do better for it. Is that a reasonable assessment?
That's the way we're thinking. I sincerely hope you're right. You know, there were reasons for sticking at six last year, not least that he's, you know, as you can see in his races, he's quite a free-running horse. And I was hoping that with maturity he'd grow out of that. And there are grounds for thinking that's right. So we'll see. But I'm certainly looking forward to trying, Nick.
And you've still got King's Gamble in the Guineas as well, I noted. And he's sort of come a little later than others. Is he on course for something?
He's run into a bit of a glitch. He's back in training now, full training now, but we had a small problem early in March and that put a lid on that. Okay. But he's a huge colt, Nick, you know, and that's part of why we're getting these little issues, because he's just not put it all together yet. But he will, and I sincerely hope that when he does, it falls into place for him.
And this time last year you said, oh, none of the horses are ready, they're all hairy, I'm running a load at Newbury, don't really fancy them, and up popped Remarque and bolted up in the Fred Darling. Are you falling victim to the terrible weather we've been having as the Newmarket trainers seem to be?
It's been tough for us this spring, you know, and for everybody. But we are behind and about the same place as we were last year. So we are running a few, but it won't be, you know, it'll be a couple of weeks before we really get, we really start having a team of runners, let's say.
That's fine. You just need to time it for Guineas weekend.
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
Ray, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Nick. Bye now.
Rafe Beckett there, and so many lovely horses to look forward to this season for him. Lots of those in the colours of Judmont Farms as well. Rafe never afraid to think outside the box, pedigree-wise, either. And before everyone jumped on the bandwagon, he was singing the praises of Golden Horn when he had Haskoy in the yard, of course. We'll be back to the home of Golden Horn next week to continue our series with Overbury Stud, who I'm sure are absolutely thrilled with Golden Ace's follow-up victory yesterday at Cheltenham, another jumping stakes winner for Golden Horn, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more on the flat to follow this season. Breeze Up season is well underway, as you heard earlier in the week, and the roadshow will roll on to Goffs UK at Doncaster next, and Simon Crisford and his son Ed have enjoyed notable success out of this sale, particularly last year with Carla's Way, who cost 350,000 guineas, knocked down to Stroud Coleman, and I've been catching up with Ed Crisford about her exploits, and in a few moments he'll tell me about plans for Van Dijk and also a little bit about tomorrow's John Porter runner Chess Piece. But first of all, let's reminisce over that great success out of the sales ring 12 months ago.
Yeah, no, absolutely. She was a lovely big Scopey filly at the sales, and Anthony loved her, and you know, Sheikh Dej bought her, and when she won first time out, she looked pretty smart then, and then took a bit of a dip at Ascot. It just all happened a bit quick for her, but she came back strong in the second half of the season and winning the Rockfell. You get to see them under tack, and you get to see what they can do. They're another sort of 6 months down the line from the yearling sales, that they're a little bit more mature. You know, we've just had a lot of luck over the years from ARLE and other stakes winners, and obviously you just mentioned Van Dijk, but you know, we've had some luck over the years. So, you know, we like to target the Breeze Up sales if we can. You're always going to get your speedy types from Goffs, and you know, you get some real sharp 2 year olds that can, you know, your proper Ascot horses. So, you know, it's always a great place to go and buy from Goffs. You know, again, we got ARLE from Goffs, and we got Alrea. She was a SUNY filly, and she won a Group 2 in France. So we've had some success from Goffs as well in previous years to Carla's Way. So, yeah, you know, obviously next we'll be following the Breeze very closely, and we'll be up there all week. So looking forward to it.
I can't have any conversation with you at the moment without asking you how Van Dijk is getting on.
He's doing super well. He's just, you know, we're targeting him at the Sandy Lane, so that's at the end of May. So he's just coming into his fast work now, but he's done really well, showing all the sort of signs that you want to see from a horse going from 2 to 3, and physically he's done really well. So we're really pleased with his progress this spring, and you know, we'll just be stepping him up in the next few weeks, really.
Good news. Excellent running of the John Porter at Newbury tomorrow. Your horse, Chess Piece, who was a regular in the top staying races as a three-year-old last year, starts his four-year-old campaign. Has he got what it takes to get in the mix against some pretty smart stayers?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very competitive race tomorrow. You know, he was always a consistent horse last year. And, you know, bar the St. Ledger, he really was sort of featuring in a lot of those staying races. But, you know, it's a nice place to start him. I think he'll probably want to go up and trip as the year goes on. But, you know, tomorrow is a nice starting point for him, although a very competitive race. But he's in super form, and he's gelded now, and he seems to have taken the winter really well.
All right, well, thank you to all my guests today. David Yates is still with me and has something for you for today.
We'll go to Exeter for the 5:30 race, Nick. And it's number 7, Paddy in the Caddy. Could be a topical tip, that, if Paddy Brennan is a golfer, whether he is or not, I don't know. In any case, Philip Hobbs and Johnson White's five-year-old made a successful handicap debut at Huntingdon last month. Also had better ground, which he should encounter today. So plenty of reasons to hope for more from Paddy in the Caddy. 5:30 race at Exeter, selection number 7, Paddy in the Caddy.
David, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. That was Friday, April the 19th. Happy birthday to my brother, James. I hope you have a winner tonight. I will see you on Monday morning. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.